Welcome back to How to Tickle Yourself. I'm your host, Duff McDonald, along with my co-host, Joey of Rockledge.
Hello.
Today, we bring you back to one of the most important topics in the history of mankind, Bob Dylan. Specifically, a massive and astounding and beautiful new book that is being published this month. It's called Bob Dylan, Mixing Up the Medicine. For anyone looking, I got it right here. It is a beautiful beast. This gem of a publication comes to us courtesy of Callaway Arts and Entertainment, and I believe the Bob Dylan Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. At more than 600 pages with over 1,100 photographs by 90 photographers and filmmakers, as well as 30 original essays by writers and artists focusing on unseen treasures from the Dylan archive. The only thing this book is missing is something written by me, but we can always wait for the second edition. Seriously, though, I own a lot of Bob Dylan books, and there are a lot more that I don't own. And I can say uncategorically that this is the most ambitious, comprehensive, and beautifully constructed book ever published about the man. And today's guests, these two fine gentlemen, are who we have to thank for it, Mark Davidson and Parker Fischel. Mark is the curator of the Bob Dylan Archive and the director of archives and exhibitions for the Bob Dylan and Woody Guthrie Centers in Tulsa. Parker is an archivist who served as co-curator of the inaugural exhibitions at the Bob Dylan Center. His company, Americana Music Productions, helps artists and record labels preserve archives and share the stories within. Together, these two dug through more than 100,000 items housed at the archive to create a multifaceted collective portrait of Bob Dylan from his childhood to nearly the present day. It is nothing short of a kaleidoscopic view of an entire era in American cultural history, and it is itself a beautiful work of art. Welcome to the show, guys. It is a thrill to have you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
At the present moment, traveling town to town, the mystery of the motion, right here, right now. Right here, right now. Whoa, right here, right now.
Let's get right to it. How did you do this? How long did it take? It's such a gigantic thing, but you nailed it.
Yeah, I want to make a correction sort of off the bat. 100,000 is a very low number. I remember one Saturday evening I spent looking for one particular Ken Regan shot that's in the book. And I went through 50,000 photos, I think, of just Ken Regan photos. So, it was a fun, Saturday evening. We started this book, maybe 6-7 years ago, shortly after the Bob Dylan Archive came to Tulsa, in 2016. First curator of the Bob Dylan Archive, Michael Chaikin, and his colleague, Robert Polito, who's a poet and professor at the New School in New York, started bringing people down to Tulsa to do public programming and to take a look in the archive and to choose an item from it and to create an essay. And that was sort of the loose idea behind the book. The Bob Dylan Center, as you mentioned, opened in May of 2022. So we had some time in between it getting here and us opening, and we had a pandemic in between, which allowed us to really focus on the Bob Dylan Center and its exhibits. It has been, and then Parker and I have been working on it pretty much nonstop for the last 18 months, almost 2 years. So it's been a long road.
So what does hundreds of thousands of items, what does it look like? Because I've been wondering since I saw the book, like it was it organized in some particular way, or was it like going into your Aunt Edna's attic and like, you know, just mucking around and looking for stuff?
Was maybe a little of column A, a little of column B. I mean, an archive of that size, you know, takes quite a while to be processed. So, and that's an ongoing, not to be redundant, process that's taking place at the Bob Dylan Archive. But so, yeah, largely all of the manuscript material, photographic material, and large swaths of the film material and the audio material have been digitized. So, you know, I'm based in Chicago. Mark is actually on the ground in Tulsa, but we have a digital archive through which, you know, those assets are available to us. And, you know, that was largely how we were able to collaborate throughout the pandemic on the center, which sort of served as, in many ways, a clarifying first pass for the book, which is obviously, you know, expands upon what we were able to do in the center and does some tricks that we weren't allowed to, or not allowed, but able to do in the center. And then the center does obviously a whole multimedia, you know, component that we couldn't present in the book. So in many ways, they're very complementary. And you having been to the center and now got the book have gotten, you know, the full experience.
So when you're going through, there's so much great stuff both at the center and in this book, obviously. And as you know, I imagine myself, like you said, Mark, that I would end up holding some letter, right, written to Bob, and it would waste an hour because, you know, as super fans. So how do you? Like, how do you stay focused on the task at hand? Like, how do you get through so much? Is it, do you have assistance? Do you have, and did you have like a running outline? Like, how'd you assemble the thing? You're muted.
Mark, you're muted.
Yes. Lots of caffeine. Yep. Lots of caffeine, lots of, evenings, weekends. We had a rough outline of what we wanted to do. And as Parker mentions, the Bob Dylan Center, our approach to that was, we didn't want to sort of create a shrine to Bob Dylan. We wanted to give something pretty much to everybody. The phrase that we've often used that we got from our lead design firm Olson Kundig is skimmers, swimmers, and divers. So those who, you know, didn't really know much about Bob Dylan, those who wanted to get a really good handle, and then the diehards who really wanted to dive deep. And so when we came up with the inaugural exhibitions for the center, and particularly in the downstairs, the Columbia Records Gallery, we have the six songs, which are designed to be swapped out. And then we have around that, we have his sort of biography broken into nine rough eras. And as you'd imagine, lots of arguments over which songs should be included and where the years should break in terms of the eras. But we got to something that we were pretty comfortable with. And Parker and I actually, we messed around with the years a little bit in the book just so that we could tell the stories that the book wanted to tell as opposed to the center.
So what about, let's get into a little bit of the book itself. You're both obviously huge Dylan fans. Was there anything, and this question's to each of you, what is the most surprising thing you discovered that you didn't know before that revealed something to you about the man or the process or the music?
For me, it's often the little details. And so I think to speak both to your previous question and this one, I mean, we just kind of made like piles, collect like buckets of things that we were interested in. And eventually it was like, okay, this is cool to us. Is it interesting to anybody else? And you winnow it down. And then as you start to sort of winnow it down, you start to see the conversation amongst items. And you start to do that more of that deep diving that you're talking about, like how do you get through one page? Well, now we want to like dissect that page so we can figure out every referent. And if we have other things in the archive that are in conversation, you know, with that piece. And so, you know, those were often the most, there's a whole lot, like many sort of broad themes, but oftentimes it was the small things. One was, you know, I was looking at a letter from Reuben Hurricane Carter, the wrongfully imprisoned boxer that Dylan famously wrote a song about and actively sort of promoted his cause around the Rolling Thunder Review in 1975. And it's a letter from a little bit later from Reuben Hurricane Carter. And, you know, it ends like right before the signature with something like, you know, I know you're still out there searching or something like that. And it caught my ear because in the Martin Scorsese documentary on the Rolling Thunder Review, there's an interview with Reuben Hurricane Carter from many years later, where he's like, Bob was like Sir Galahad. He was always out there searching for something, right? Like, and it connected, right? Like this wasn't an offhand remark that Reuben Hurricane Carter made at the time, or, you know, it was like a real thing that had been a discussion of them. And in a way, maybe that's as inside as you get into, you know, the world of Bob Dylan. And so I loved sort of the little moments like that, that sort of throughout the book that made a letter more than just an object, but something that could tell, you know, a story. Another really brief one is my other favorite thing is so much was made to do when Dylan mentioned Alicia Keys in Thunder on the Mountain, the track on the 2006 album Modern Times, and everyone was like, you know, what's the story here, blah blah blah. And, you know, Dylan's explanation was like, I met her at the Grammys and, you know, I was taken, you know, with what she was doing. And early drafts of that, of which we sort of, you know, found actually like reference, not just Alicia Keys, but a specific album track, you know, for that album that had come out around the time they met. I think it was Songs in the Key of Life for, no way, is that the, oh man, that's, anyway. Anyway, it references the track Butterflies. And so there were just little moments that, like, you know, make things come alive. And those for me were some of the most exciting discoveries. But I'm sure Mark has other things.
What do you got, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the surprising fact that so much has been kept and saved and you know, that there's so much there. It's been an interesting experience kind of living with the manuscripts. You know, as I said before, we had a center in 2022. The archive lived over at Gilcrease Museum in just close to downtown. And I would give tours to a lot of people, just anybody who, and not anybody who came in, but like, you know, names, famous musicians. Yeah, VIPs, that sort of thing. And there would be moments where I would be showing songs that, you know, Bob had mentioned the person in the song.
Oh, wow.
I had that happen once. And just that sort of that moment where you go, gosh, I'm looking at the draft version of Subterranean Homesick Blues. Like, this is amazing. But I, you know, I handle this stuff all the time, and the steward of it. I'm not, you know, rustling papers every day all the time. But there was in those mid 60s typescripts, I found references to a particular it was like page references to some French poetry. And I managed to sleuth out, you know, pretty much the exact anthology of French poetry that he was looking at, based on the page numbers and the, you know, year that they were, that this book was out. And I got confirmation recently through an email with somebody that they said, oh yeah, Van Ronk used to have this anthology of French poetry that Bob was obsessed with. And he was, you know, constantly poring over it. And I was like, oh, you know, amazing. So anyhow, it's all those fun discoveries when you really dive into a collection that rich.
Yeah, I don't think that if you weren't a Dylan fan when you started this book, you would totally be one by the end. Like, it's like, it's such a fascinating look into his life that it paints a picture of him as a human being. You know, it's like, it's really, it's mind blowing. I think one of my favorite things was that they found a bunch of red letters that he wrote and never sent. Like, he never had mailed them, like went through and wrote this beautiful letter, and then it was still in the envelope and he had it. It's just kind of like, it's so sweet and beautiful. The whole thing. Duff, you know, described what, it perfectly. It's a beautiful beast.
You know what memory you guys served up to me this morning? There's the page in there on the Supper Club concerts in New York City. And you're talking about people standing in line at Tower Records. I did that. I went to two of those shows. And it occurred to me this morning, I was like, wait, how the hell did I hear about that? Because it was pre-internet, right? Or very early. And I read about those shows in the New York Post on the weekend and knew to go get in line at Tower Records. I didn't go the night before. I went at like 5:30 in the morning on the Monday. And we were 3/4 of the way around the whole entire giant block, but we made it in the end. I was panicking for like 2 hours that they were going to run out of tickets before we got there.
I was watching Supper Club footage just an hour ago. So coincidental, yes.
Right. And I have those four, they're bootlegs, but the four blue CDs, those were great shows. Crystal clear, too.
Yeah.
I went into my own Dylan archive today. I was like, what can I show these guys that makes me legit? And I found this upstairs.
Ah, there you go.
The MSG thing from 92, right?
Send it to me. I'll put it on display.
do you have any of them? I'll send it to you in a flash.
Okay, well, we can discuss. Okay. I don't, and we can discuss.
All right. You talked about the song exhibits at the museum. Those are one of the coolest immersive things I have ever seen in my life. Now, granted, I was interested, but the sort of combination of audio, video, physical, paper. I thought when I left the museum, and you know, you said you're trying to give something to everybody. The thing I felt like it gave everybody was a window into creative genius, especially with those songs. Like, you saw how it happened, which was a relationship I had never had with a song, or a Dylan song in particular, right? You just had you liked listening to it. You knew a little piece of trivia about it. I actually said at the time to a friend I was there with, I was like, I hope they swap these out because I'm coming back. What is the schedule? What's the turn on those?
Well, we've been discussing that quite a little bit. And I said, as I said, we actually sent out to a bunch of our sort of close colleagues, major Dylan fans, you know, what are your top 10 Dylan songs that you would like to see us do a deep dive on? And that created its own set of arguments. We've got a few in mind to swap out. We're opening a new exhibit for the book launch weekend, which is October 20th, 21st. And I'm very excited. It's based on the book. It will be showing off some treasures from the Bob Dylan Center. And hopefully that will be a nice reason for a return visit. But yeah, we've got plans.
And go ahead, Doug.
No,
I was just going to say, I guess there's the Woody Guthrie Museum, right? But is there anything else that even comes close to this sort of thing? Like to the Dylan Center?
Like musician-wise, do you know of them? Is there a Beatles thing like this? I can't imagine it.
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. I also don't know of another musician archive that's quite, you know, like the Bob Dylan archive.
Yeah. There was an exhibit that I saw in Chicago called David Bowie Is, and it was put together by the I believe the V&A Museum, and it traveled, went to Brooklyn. I saw it in Chicago. It was in London, and I was pretty blown away by it. And so I had it in the back of my mind, and a really wonderful, exhibition on Leonard Cohen that I had seen too. Both of these happened before, the Dylan Center. David Bowie, I think, was, before I was even in Tulsa. But it turns out that the people who did the exhibit design, particularly the media design on the David Bowie exhibit, were one of the people who wanted to do the Dylan Center, and in the end we went with it with them. So I think the long answer to that, or the short version, is there have been some incredible exhibits I think that have been out there, but. Perhaps not a standalone dedicated center with a permanent exhibit like that.
Yeah, and if you think of Bowie, he had the scope of the career and also the
costumes,
the creative breadth as well. Is there, and I hate to put you on the spot again, but what's the funniest thing you've found in the archives?
Oh, I know what I made Mark include.
I know what I was going to say, but I don't think Parker and I can speak of it. So Parker, you go.
Oh no.
That could be any number of things, Mark. There were so many. So part of what the Bob Dylan Archive received was a mailbag. Like an old mailbag, which if you've been to the center, you can see it in the archive wall, stuffed full of unopened fan mail from about 1966. And as part of some of the contents were kind of moldy. So as part of the preservation of those materials, they were taken out, they were actually opened, and they were cataloged. And amongst the contents, there are amazing, first of all, it's amazing. He's getting, letters from across the world, you know, in 1966, like the reach is that broad already. And there's all kinds of things that people are sending him: Ouija planchettes, a paperback copy of Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle. But the letters themselves are also really zany. And I feel like the ones that I made Mark include are some of like the funniest objects. Maybe that, like, one is a kid who has to write a high school report on someone famous. And he says that he's writing to Dylan because Dylan is the second most famous person after Fatty Arbuckle. there's another young person who writes, and wants to know if he, like, you know, P.S. do you like tuna fish sandwiches? Just, you know, that was the teen culture. That was it was like a really charming sort of, if you think of Dylan in 1966, you know, answering a question about if he likes tuna fish sandwiches. It's a very, you know, odd thing to imagine. So
what was one of those kids asked him to go hunting for Bigfoot or something? Or
there's a there's a Bigfoot letter too. There's,
wow.
It's amazing. The
other thing about that fan mail bag is because it's 1966, you've got the motorcycle accident of July 29th. So a ton of letters coming in from all over the world asking for, can I get a photo, a signed photo? Can I get an autograph? That, you know, love your music. And then a lot of get well cards after that. And that's pretty amazing. There was a one particular letter that we included from November of 66 from a young soldier in Vietnam who was from Buffalo. And I think he was having a pretty hard time and heard Blown in the Wind on the radio. And then, you know, found Dylan's management office's address in a magazine that had been lying around and, you know, to write fan letters. And so he wrote this very personal letter to Bob. You know, I'm assuming that he was assuming that it, you know, would probably never get read, but it was about, you know, how many friends he had lost and how much he just wanted to get back home to his loved ones and all of that. And so in the midst of, you know, all of these, you know, younger fans writing him, you know, there's somebody out there who whose, you know, music moved Dylan or Dylan's music moved him in a sort of different way. And it was an honor to discover that letter and to read it. Incredible.
So what's the secret to mixing up the medicine? How does he do it? If anyone knows, you guys know.
I think what's as we say recipe? In our preface, you know, the book doesn't really answer that question. It mostly just allows you to ask hopefully the right questions. I think it happens in many different ways and in ways that seem from what Dylan has said are just as mysterious to him and are maybe best left so. But certainly the book provides a lot of glimpses as to how, you know, some of those working methods. I think, you know, we've talked a lot, Mark and I have talked a lot about how when we talk about like genius or an artist who's created at this level over 60 plus years and, you know, is still creating work of the highest order, you know, the labor that's involved tends to get flattened into that word genius. And we don't think about what goes into that. And, you know, so you can see just, you know, how much, you know, the creative impulse at work, how Dylan is constantly writing, how, you know, these, you know, we have the picture of all the drafts splayed out of Dignity, 40 odd drafts. And that's just for him to take the song into the studio where it's going to change so much more. And then he's going to, you know, ultimately decides, you know, at the end of recording it for Oh Mercy, you know, it's not done and leaves it off the album, only to pick it up again and in a very, very Dylan-esque move, finish it and add it to Greatest Hits Volume 3, which I think we'd all agree it deserves to be on that. But so I think, you know, just it happens through a lot of hard work. It happens through, you can see through some of the like notes that are included that Dylan seems to be omnivorous in the, what, you know, influences that he takes in and processes and filters. He doesn't really distinguish between high and low, or good and bad. He just sees things that are interesting and that he can sort of fit together in his different way. You see different processes. You see a song like Subterranean Homesick Blues that's like there on the page, you know, like that's it. Basically, it's a draft, but it's there. Or you can see things like the Blood on the Tracks notebooks where like a million different things are happening, you know, at the same time. And then you can see, you know, something like Tempest where, you know, things are sort of falling into place a little bit differently. You know, you're getting some of those odd reference that you get from across sort of the cultural spectrum in the, you know, more recent work. So I'm not sure that that's a satisfying answer, except to say that it's really interesting. And you can see, you know, the book gives a lot of different sort of examples of how that happens.
It's satisfying. I would sort of say a summary of that is it happens in all the ways. You just got to be doing it. If you're not doing it, it's not going to happen. Right. So
that's exactly it.
So do you guys have a favorite, a current favorite Dylan tune?
Everybody does.
What's yours?
What's my current one? Wow. Okay. I want to go last.
Okay. All right. Mark.
Well, it's funny. We had producer Arthur Baker out to do a program at the Woody Guthrie Center. Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan Centers are sibling museums under the same organization, American Song Archives, and we're all part of the George Kaiser Family Foundation's sort of bigger work in Tulsa. So we had Arthur Baker out doing a program for an exhibit that we had on disco that just closed. And he was talking about all the work that he had done. And so I've sort of been toggling between his version of When the Night Comes Falling from the Sky and the version that we currently have in our cinema at the Bob Dylan Center, which is, Parker, remind me of when that that performance was.
1986.
From the Sydney, Handel. Australia, Hard to Handle. Among all the rest of the things that we're doing is large scale digitization and preservation work of audio and film footage and the Hard to Handle stuff. I think at that point the largest 35 millimeter film shoot in Australian history is a project that we've been working on. So so that's a long answer to a short question.
What about you, Parker?
I'll go with Stuck Inside a Mobile with the Memphis Blues again. I just introduced my 4-year-old to that song, so we could go, "Oh, mama, is this really the end?" And so it's we've been doing, he sits through a 7-minute song, so I'm for it.
Amazing.
So my daughter is 14. When she was like 4, what song would, or what album would have been to come out 10 years ago? Let's see.
Do you have that in your head, Parker?
Yeah, it would be Love and Theft would have been the most recent one.
Okay, it was Love and Theft. Yes. So we're driving in the car. She's 4 years old. And I had, at that moment, I had transitioned from kids music to, I was, because Raffi was killing me. So I was back to playing my own songs. And I put Love and Theft in, and she's in the backseat of the car. And she goes, "Is this Bob Dylan?" And I was like, "Oh my God, my work here is done." I was like, "Yes, it is Bob Dylan." And she goes, "What happened to his voice?" My current favorite is the When I Paint My Masterpiece off Shadow Kingdom. I love that album. It's so cool, right? For him to give us, I saw it during the whenever it came out in the pandemic, but it's such a perfectly recorded album, and the versions on it are just, like you said, he's still got it. He's still doing it. All right. So listeners, this book is out on October 24th, which should be this week. So, in fact, no, today. The book that we're talking about is out today. Go to your nearest newsstand, or I would advise Amazon, because it's pretty heavy. You might want someone else to get it from the store to your house. It is a thing of beauty, obviously a a work of passion. And congratulations, guys. It's one of the greatest books I've ever seen. And I'm not just saying that because I'm biased. It is what you accomplished in there is astounding. Like I said at the beginning, I have a little Dylan shrine here. And so I kind of put all my Dylan books aside because I was like, I don't need to keep looking at these. This one is never coming off our coffee table ever until I die. So thank you for that. Thank you for everything. Thank you for the center and congratulations. It's a remarkable achievement.
Thanks. Thanks so
Thank you so much for
having us. And I will say you can order through the bobdylancenter.com signed copies. Parker and I will be signing them. It will immediately tank the value of the book the second our pen hits it, but
it's like taking the car off the lot.
Yep. But yes, those are available as well.
bobdylancenter.com, is that what it is?
Yep.
So go to bobdylancenter.com. But whatever you do, listeners, have a look at this in one way or another. If that means you got to come over here, see you soon. It's a great book. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's a beautiful piece. I feel like, where I'm running the risk of losing listeners on this podcast from an over-concentration on Bob Dylan. But let me put it this way. If you're going to over-concentrate on Bob Dylan, this book is the way you want to do it, or the museum itself. It's in Tulsa. It's amazing. But the book is just... it's unbelievable.
It really is. And I think you and I give two different perspectives because you are a super fan and I'm just a person on the street. And I find it completely fascinating too. I was just drinking my tea this morning and going through page by page and it just blew me away. There's so much in there. It's amazing.
I loved Parker's answer to what's your favorite or most surprising thing, where he said he was able to make connections between the Thunder on the Mountain, which mentioned Alicia Keys, and then he saw the thing. And then as a super fan of anyone, when something fills in the white space for you, it's one of the best feelings. Where a thing that you thought about or listened to or focused on so often, suddenly there's a new dash of color in that picture in your mind. And this book is doing it for me across the board. I said, it reminded me of the Supper Club thing. And it's like, oh my God. And I remembered standing in line. Wow, those guys are talented. And I wish we lived closer to Tulsa. I've got one for you. It's not traditional. It's just in the spirit of Bob Dylan because he's coined so many great turns of phrase. It boggles the mind. And I just want to give you one from a movie that you and I recently watched called El Conde. And this seems like it could be out of a Bob Dylan song. Some guy was talking to someone about chasing him down or I'll catch you. And he goes, I'll make you sweat like the horse of a bandit.
So good. El Conde was really good. It's a great movie if anyone's listening. Sorry, Oscar, take that out.
So to close this up.
Yeah.
I don't have Oribindo. I've been reading this book called Bhagavad Gita, The Divine Message. It's a two-part commentary on the Bhagavad Gita by a guy named Swami Abhedananda, who is one of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples. And it's basically commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. But I pulled this quote because we talked about how does Dylan do it, right? And one of the things Parker was saying there is basically focus, right? You have to do it. It's hard work and you got to commit yourself to the thing and results come. That's the way it works. With him, it's obviously on a level of genius that is kind of startling to the rest of us. But here it is. He says, when you sit in meditation and withdraw your mind entirely, you will know that you are not affected by any thought or idea. If you can meditate in the purest sense and have just once realized the truth, you will never forget it in your life. Then nothing else will appeal to you. You will see reality face to face. I think Bob Dylan has been staring reality in the face his whole career.
Sounds like it.
Just a thought, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? Thank you for listening.
I was going to say, when they were talking about him just taking in information, it's like they were talking about him doing it.
No judgment,
like no ego in it, right? Just accepting. It's awesome.
Right. Letting it all in. And the point about high low there, right? His so many songs are high low. He may be the greatest mixer of high low that's ever been, among all his other accomplishments. Thank you for listening. Listeners, we'll be back with you in a week.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to How to Tickle Yourself with your host, Duff McDonald, and me, Joey of Rockledge. You can help us by liking, subscribing, and sharing this podcast with others. You can talk to us and see what else is happening on Instagram and Facebook at How to Tickle Yourself. This program was recorded in Studio B of the historic Rockledge Recording Studio. Right Here, Right Now, our original 16-part theme music, was written and recorded by the legendary Paul Reddick and Kyle Ferguson of The Sidemen, with Steve Mariner on bass and drums and in the mixing room. This podcast is produced and distributed by Storic Media. Our editor is Oscar Desiderio. Our producers are Kristen Verbitsky and Chuck LaBella. For more information, visit storicmedia.com. That's storicmedia.com.